Hello, I'm standing here in the exhibition Urban Africa, David Adjaye's photographic journey, with David Adjaye, the architect, in a room with over 3,000 photographs of every capital city in Africa. Well, nearly all.
The capital city. With the exception of...
There are 52 here. David, how did this project come about?
Well, the whole thing really started off, not formally, because I think if I started by wanting to photograph 52 cities, I probably wouldn't have done it. I've been overwhelmed by the daunting fact. It started off as a way of just getting back to my childhood, really, firstly. It was I was born in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, in East Africa. My father was a diplomat, traveled all over Africa as a young child, so I have all these fragments of memories of city life and urban life in the continent. And sort of in my early 30s, I just wanted to sort of go back and discover it on my own terms. I've been going back to Africa in the 20s, but with my parents and things like that. And so in the 30s, it was kind of my turn to discover it for myself. And I sort of, of course, I qualified as an architect. I sort of was working for people. But I decided that I wanted to just take snapshots of things that I liked. And inevitably, there are lots of buildings in there because as an architect, that's what you do. And I started showing friends those photographs. And I was really shocked at the impressions that I got back from people. They were just astonished. They didn't kind of know what to imagine of certain places. And they were thrilled and surprised and wanted to see more. So I realized that maybe there was a sort of cavity in the collective consciousness of urban life in Africa. And of course, Africans knew and know and don't think anything of it. But like maybe the rest of the planet really didn't have the visual data of the continent. So I started to formally start to photograph every time I went to a capital city or to a country. So in 2003, I was asked to do a show at Harvard. And decided that actually what would be more interesting would be show what I called Capital Africa, African capitals, because I was then kind of in the midst of doing work and they hadn't finished yet, and I thought, well, not so interesting to do models and stuff. Anyway, I did a show, I showed 12 countries in Boston, and the papers kind of went a little bit crazy thinking, oh my God, look at this, blah, 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 and the school were all fascinated. Because even though this is, you know, there's Harvard GSD, which is one of the most sophisticated sort of architectural schools on the planet, they were totally unaware of the African continent, except for, you know, some, you know, Habitat for Humanity projects or sort of help projects. So I realized that actually this was something that not just was about public consciousness, but even architects' consciousness. And then I started to formally really document everything.
The exhibition is divided by city, but also each city, the cities have been grouped by terrain. So that is the six geographical land areas of Africa. Why is that important to divide Africa up in its actual geography?
I thought that it's really important. I thought that we deal with abstraction so much and we understand the planet as these abstract things. We tend to think of places as abstractions, kind of boundaries, borders, shapes, that are really political ideas. And what I'm trying to talk about is that architecture and city life and people's urban lives are lived on the ground and the terra firma and the way the ground is. And what we know about the planet is that it has extreme variety of kind of different geographical types. But in Africa specifically, because it's sort of positioned in the middle, you have this extraordinary, very extreme range of more or less the six types of land that you get on the continent, bar the polar caps, I think. So I wanted to show that with 53 countries, which is an overwhelming kind of number if you start to imagine it, there were really six categories. And if you think about it, if you think of six categories, you can then start to imagine the kinds of architecture that are built in those six categories. If you think of a mountain, alpine city, you realize, okay, it's the snow and it affects it, and you understand what alpine cities are. Or if you think of or the Middle East, you think of desert cities, you start to understand what those are. And in a way, that's the phenomena of the continent. So you have these six geographic qualities which you described, which have been there for, you know, very long time evolving, and have kind of evolved new types of urbanism depending on occupation, politics, or just the local cultural kind of evolution.
Yes, because we're just standing by Bamako in Mali, and yes. I think this is a very good example where you immediately, it's the colour from the photographs that really comes out.
Absolutely.
Even though there are many different styles of architecture and functions of architecture, there is a uniformity of colour in the materials.
Yes. I mean, with Bamako, with the Sahel and desert countries, they can't ignore Like, we can't ignore the rain. They can't ignore the what they call the hamatans, or the hot sand, the sandstorms that kind of come to the country. And so sandstorms are a phenomena of desert and Sahel city. So if you paint your building white, you'll be painting it every 2 months. So it's, people tend to kind of go for more neutral earth colors. And if you look at the kind of the suburbs and the countryside even, people don't even bother painting their buildings. They actually make them out of the material of the earth. So in a way, it's much more resistant. So you get this very interesting kind of quality to the city of this incredible beige, quite mass wall, not large windows, sort of architecture, which is really very powerful and leaves a very strong impression when you visit the city.
I think it would be nice to walk around the different terrains, starting at the top.
Yes, well, the Maghreb is, you could say, the top of Africa, and the moment where Africa, as it were, is entwined with Europe through the Mediterranean. The sort of the basin of the Mediterranean creates the sort of bowl, and the Maghreb countries are really the coastal countries that are attached to the Mediterranean Sea, and they are very, very special climates. It's a kind of Mediterranean climate, southern, slightly hotter than the European end, and were very much influenced by Islam and by Arab culture. So I think you find in that top crescent from Morocco right through to Cairo a very strong presence of Arab culture, but very, very different. It's, you can't even kind of typify it. You have Tripoli, which is a sort of socialist Islamic country with like incredible developmental ideas about social equity. So there's incredible housing for, you know, you look at the housing in Tripoli and you can't believe that it's actually a country in Africa. But that's because of the socialist bent on it, you know, and because they're obsessed with kind of everybody having, you know, homes, etc. And it's also a very wealthy country. It has oil, vast oil reserves, and it's making great use of it. But it also has this incredible colonial Italian rationalist past. So you see these beautiful Art Deco buildings, which are exquisite all over the city. And it has this kind of incredible fort architecture because it was a very, you know, it was one of the pentapolises of the old empire, the classical empire. So with Tunis, it was kind of part of the extension of the Greek world. So you have incredible ruins in the middle of the city. You know, you have extraordinary things.
The exhibition divides the continent into cities, but also within each city there are three bands. So the photographs are divided into the civic buildings, the commercial buildings, and the residential buildings. So in the main room at the exhibition, you can actually walk along and follow the residential buildings through the, from city to city, and really get a sense of the contrast, similarities and the differences together of the different urban environments, and it gives you a sense of the scale of the city and the different regions.
It's so important to really, you know, we're overwhelmed, there's so many buildings in a city, and just to anybody who doesn't kind of need to analyze it, it seems like a lot of built stuff, but actually there are these three primary components to the city, and I wanted to focus on them as sort of a way of really framing, making a kind of lens for understanding architecture and buildings. There are civic buildings, which really are just to do with the civic life, the public life, the life which is about society, and all the kind of bits to it. So it's to do with presidential buildings, administrative buildings, courts, libraries, churches, mosques, synagogues, you name it, markets. And then there's basically the commercial architecture, which ranges from everything from the corner store or the guy selling bananas on the sidewalk through to banks and, you know, estate agents and travel agents, or whatever else. And then there's the residential architecture, which is really, in the residential architecture, what I've tried to do is kind of look at the range of types. So very wealthy houses, so, you know, extremely wealthy palaces for bourgeois, the middle classes and where they live, the poor and where they live, and also the destitute, those who have no homes, you know, the sort of fringe architecture that happens, which in Africa is sometimes sort of scorned and moved out of the city, but usually left in the city. So you have this kind of very interesting range of architecture that you can see just in the city. You go past a skyscraper, and then next door to it, there might be a shantytown. So you get this extreme polarity, which can be very disconcerting if you're not used to it, and a bit heart-wrenching to see somebody in that and to see somebody else in a tower block. But it's the kind of enormity of the range of urban life that's experienced on the continent.
I think for a Londoner, where every aspect of London is planned and architect designed. Mm. It is those unofficial developments that give an incredible freshness and richness to the exhibition, I think.
It gives a certain spontaneity, which I think is unusual. It's something we lack in our cities now because of the control.
So that was the Maghreb, and then the desert area, which has the fewest towns and cities, as you would imagine. It's the least
populous.
It's populous. It's hard to live in.
Very hard.
So presumably these cities are tough cities.
They're tough cities. And where the city usually sort of forms itself is in the desert is usually by a river or a lake or something like that. But Khartoum, which is an extraordinary city, but in the middle of the desert, is at the nexus, the confluence of the White and the Blue Nile before they become the sort of Great Nile, which goes right through to, you know, right through to the north of Africa. And it's sort of, in a way, is the birthplace of that whole incredible civilization, which becomes the Egyptian civilization that we all know. So even though something like Khartoum is a desert city, unlike something like Bamako, because of its position by this river, it's extremely lushy. So you have this very, very sort of great city with incredible architecture, incredible sort of gentrified class. You have brick architecture everywhere, which was really surprising. Yes. I didn't think I'd see brick in Khartoum, but very much so. You have beautiful sort of Art Deco villas. You have incredible modernist architecture. And it's actually a very old city in the sense that it's got very layered history. And that was very, very surprising. Very, very surprising.
That notion of the architecture being informed by the history of each city, the date of independence of each city seems to have given a great spurt, a great renaissance in building.
Absolutely. What is kind of clear about the whole continent is that you have incredible architecture post-independence. I think every nation was trying to kind of find a way of signaling their new trajectory into the world, into their future, with architecture. Architecture becomes a way of talking about the stories of our lives in made in stone and brick and concrete. So you'll find a sort of moment in all the kind of images where you have this incredible modernist architecture. And modernism was used as a way of projecting into the future. Modernism was the architecture of the future, which wasn't happening in any great abundance in Europe, but it was very much the style that was of the age, the intellectual style. So actually you find a lot of the early modernist projects about city planning and urban architecture was actually built on the continent, because a lot of these leaders pulled this intellectuals and thinkers to the continent to try out those ideas as a way of kind of showing a new idea about the future. In Kinshasa, which is the Congo, was formerly Zaire, and it was a Belgian colony, you have a really important university, which is on the hills, and one of the sort of hills of Kinshasa, one of the sort of hills around Kinshasa, and it's an extraordinary composition of sort of Belgian civic sort of strip neoclassical and modernist architecture. And it's a huge collection of buildings on this hill, which are some dilapidated, but very much create a really powerful civic presence. And it's a really powerful architecture and a real testament to that age and that time. And also shows how important Kinshasa was as a strategic point at that moment, that there's this sort of huge investment in, you know, this very powerful symbolic architecture for the city.
I think it's interesting that although architecturally some of the civic buildings perhaps are more striking, in the exhibition there is no hierarchy, so there is as many residential buildings, commercial buildings and civic buildings. And I think this sort of looking at the city, at all the types of buildings that are needed in the city, and the way it's shown in the exhibition is very much as a survey. I think you've mentioned that, you know, if nobody has ever been to a city, one of these cities before, looking at this selection of photographs, you get a complete sense of what the city is about, of its urbanism and its architecture.
Absolutely. I think for me it was important not to do the usual find the five iconic buildings to kind of describe the city. I wanted to give people what I call the atmosphere of the city through architecture. So you get an atmospheric image, and so in a way the images make a kind of collage which give you a sense of some kind of whole. So I didn't want to, you know, I didn't shoot, there were very beautiful buildings which you could stand and shoot beautifully and, you know, sunsets and stuff. But I wanted to shoot them just as informally as I was shooting the houses that I was driving past. So, you know, you might get a parliament building which is sort of framed, you know, in an oblique way, but it's really to talk about the idea that they're all kind of the parts that make the composition, and that when you look at the whole composition, you get that sense of the whole and not any single individual buildings. Mm-hmm. Botswana is an amazing country, a British colony, very genteel, small population, very wealthy. But the savannah has a really beautiful atmosphere because it's not quite in the thickness of the sort of rainforest, so it doesn't have that humidity. But it has this kind of wonderful climate that's very temperate and very, very sunny and very, very fine, very fresh. Also, you find that that's kind of where all the migrations happen. The savannah's the way the animals like to hang out because that's where the best food is. So if you follow the savannah pattern throughout Africa, that's where the animals go from winter to summer, you know, as they migrate up and down. And Botswana has probably the best game, the best secret game. You know, people go to Kenya and Tanzania and South Africa, but actually Botswana probably has the best game because they have an incredible policy of sort of ecology towards their land, which has meant that incredible preserves for, lots of species go to mate and kind of procreate in, are kind of protected and kept. So you get to see an incredible landscape. But the architecture, it's sort of has this very sort of Scandinavian British quality to it, vaults and sort of stripped modernism, which is really, 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 really beautiful. And then you have very, very fine houses with senses of privacy. There's sort of very much this architecture of the individual kind of bungalow sort of in the landscape, which is really, really, really special.
Within the civic photographs, you have all the sort of religious buildings placed side by side. And I think it's fascinating to see the difference in architecture between, and just the complexity of the societies, often with enormous range of languages and religions, and I think that really comes across in the architecture too.
Absolutely. You realize that actually these are very much, when I say that they're metropolitan cities, I really mean it. This is you find, you know, Sikh temples, you find mosques of all the kind of denominations, you find, you know, Orthodox churches from, you know, sort of from Greek Orthodox right through to Ethiopian Orthodox, and you find obviously Christian churches, sort of the Anglican tradition and also the Pentecostal tradition sort of littered throughout. And you find in the cities an incredible mix, even though they may seem genteel, you find in almost every single city an incredible mix of different peoples from different parts of the world and different parts of the continent, which is very, very surprising. And a kind of tolerance to kind of be with each other because there's been a kind of huge tradition of it. You know, it's been centuries of mixing and knowing about others. So it's a kind of part of the patina of the city.
The last terrain is the mountain and high veld, with a very different climate and a very different architecture.
Mountain high veld is really particular, and it's really difficult to see it. And it's probably the most difficult to explain in terms of visual culture, but it's about altitude and living up in the high mountains. And it ranges from Lesotho, you know, the high mountain town, small sort of South African Zulu kingdom town of Lesotho, through to Asmara in Eritrea, which is a really beautiful city just on the sort of on the eastern, northeastern coast of Africa. In something like Asmara, you have again an Italian tradition, but a very particular Italian tradition, which is a very beautiful Art Deco buildings and also sort of slightly fascist buildings, which are really very fine, very elegant buildings. Right through to Kigali. Kigali has extraordinary kind of climate. Kigali is really the real garden city of Africa. It's like this lush place, which is a real joy to kind of visit. And in a way, I was saying, you sort of land in these high veld places and you have to sort of learn how to breathe again, because they're these fantastic plateau cities. And you find this very kind of convivial climate, and people have a very kind of particular way of using the city because you learn how to pace yourself within these kind of places.
So after photographing 52 cities over a 10-year period, what do you feel you've learned from that?
the million-dollar question. Yeah. I think the million-dollar question is not a one-line answer, but just to understand the phenomena of cities in different terrains in the world and to understand how fast cities are growing now and what that does for the way in which people use the idea of the city. You know, the city is no longer just the sum of nice houses and nice infrastructure. It's a kind of, it's the external room of you know, of people, and when you don't have, how you kind of make do is fascinating, and when you do have, what you do build is also fascinating. But in Africa, the climate is an outdoor climate. So there's this kind of sense of the use of the outside world, even when it's not structured, which was really fascinating to me. This ability to use, not to be so much sort of concerned about the sort of indoor world and the outdoor world, and the outdoor world being just about getting from A to B, unless if there's a kind of nice day, but this idea that it's an extension of your life, and it's an extension of the kind of pleasure of using the city in the shade, in the heat, you know, in the morning to kind of get to the market. And I thought that was a very powerful thing that kind of needed to be kind of connected to, and something which I found really inspiring.